Let me tell you about something new.
It's time.
A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
Well, good morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen. Thank God it's Friday Eve, and welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. Hope you're having a blessed day. Kind of watching sporadically Mother Nature losing its battle with one of the neighbors as they're chopping down a big, pretty tree. That's just, whatever they want to do. So, but I thank you for being with us and hope you're well and safe and battling this COVID and keeping up with the news. As most of you know, the vice presidential candidate, well, soon to be vice presidential candidate, I think he has to accept his nomination on the Democratic side, Joe Biden, he selected his VP. Former VP selected his VP to be, and that is Senator Kamala Harris. We want to talk a little bit today about what that might mean and if that was the choice and what your thoughts are. So I invited some ladies. I know one of them at the last minute cannot join us today, but I want to see who's on. So Ms. Greenwell, are you there? Okay. Ms. Brown, are you there?
I am. Good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. And yourself?
I'm doing quite well. So we have back with us Attorney Nadine Brown. She is an immigration attorney here in Central Florida. And, I've known Nadine over 20 years now, it seems.
Yes.
I can't believe that. Wow. So she's going to be with us. Stephanie Dukes was my friend from college, was supposed to be with us today, too. But Stephanie is actually running for State Representative District 32, South Lake County. So she's actually in the middle of a candidate screening that was supposed to be earlier, and they switched it at the last minute. So it started just a few minutes ago. So I don't know if she's going to be able to join us or not. So, Ava Greenwell, I don't know. Ava, are you on? Okay. Ava is going to try to join us. She is with the Northwestern's Medill School of Journalism. So, and then we've invited others. So, and you can join the conversation too. The number is 516-387-1944. Is that you, Ava? Okay. I heard somebody.
Hello.
And then I heard Nadine.
Hi. Yeah, can you hear me, Gretchen?
Yes. Is this Ava?
Oh, okay. It is.
Okay, so we have Ava and we have Nadine. Good morning, ladies. Thank you for taking the time out.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, so these are women that I highly respect and are just excellent in their field and have their opinions. You've heard them both. I know you've heard Nadine quite more than you've heard Ava, but still, I've known Ava since I was first in broadcasting years back, not too long after coming out of college, and she was a reporter in Tampa. And we got different perspectives here. So Kamala Harris had a run for the presidential nomination and then withdrew, and now she's teamed up with Joe Biden as the VP nominee. So I'm going to start with you, Ava, from the journalistic side, and get your opinion on Do you think this was a good pick? Do you think she can hold her own? Is it what Joe Biden needed? Whatever questions you want to answer, be my guest.
Well, first of all, I will say from a personal perspective, when he made the announcement or when the announcement was released, that was the best news I had heard in months about all the news that we've had recently as it relates to COVID, as it relates to George Floyd, as it relates to Black Lives Matter. So that was the first thing. You know, there was also some relief for me because I wasn't sure if he was actually going to do it, you know. So it actually, I think, is very good news. There's no perfect candidate, right, for any of these particular offices. And so I think the fact that we now have a woman of color who is on the ticket is fantastic news. I would also say let's not forget about other women who have been on the ticket in the past. One in particular who has come to mind in some of my networks is Charlotta Bass, who actually was a journalist on the West Coast who was on the vice presidential progressive ticket back in the 1950s. And, of course, Shirley Chisholm, you know, we can't forget about her either. I think what's interesting about Kamala Harris, and I'm glad to see a pivot in the reporting this time in terms of identity that we didn't necessarily see with Barack Obama. You know, Barack Obama was labeled the first Black president. But in some ways, we failed to acknowledge his biracial identity and the fact that, you know, he had a Black Kenyan father and a white Kansas mother. With Kamala Harris, I have seen, yes, you know, Black woman, but I've also seen African-American and Southeast Asian woman, you know, a woman of mixed heritage, a woman of whose mother is Indian and whose father is Jamaican. And so I think that signals a pivot that we are saying identities can be much more complex than just someone being labeled as African-American. And I'm glad to see that because I don't think we want to forget her Indian heritage as part of this journey that we're going to be experiencing for the next few months and hopefully for the next few years.
I want to ask you, Nadine, about her on because you bring a couple of perspectives that I think you and Ms. Harris can identify with. One, her Jamaican heritage. Two, the legal background. So what are your thoughts? And I, especially when it comes down the road to maybe immigration policy, how do you think this will figure in?
So I think that this is a wonderful pick because it's an anecdote to the anti-immigrant sentiment that has been wielded by the Trump administration. Clearly, Kamala is a product of immigrants, whether it's from South Asia or from the Caribbean, and I carry those heritages as well. So it's a remarkable pick for me, very strategic, very dynamic, and a response to all of the vitriol that's been going on when it comes to the anti-immigrant sentiment. So I think it's a good thing for America in that respect. Also because she has a phenomenal legal background. She's been attorney general for an incredible state, a populous state, California. And so that dynamic as well brings power, I think, to the position. Not to diminish any of the previous candidates that have been or ran for office, whether it's Shirley Chisholm or people who've been in office, Barbara Jordan or any of the other representatives that we have or some of the other nominees that could have easily been picked, Karen Bass or Susan Rice and some of the leftovers from and I don't mean that derogatorily from the Obama administration, but I think it's an incredible experience that we're having, not just because of her multi-ethnic, complex identity, but because she is a progressive woman of color and is an answer to what we've been experiencing as a nation in the emotional upheaval and the, you know, the police violence and what have you. So she, I think, can bring a lot to that discussion. And having a policy background of already being a junior senator, she can speak to those issues that Congress is going through, as well as, you know, a position in the executive. The fact that she's a product of immigrants, she in her debates has explained her experience being bused, I think is a phenomenal legacy that can speak to some of the policies going forward and some of the healing that we need to experience in this country in every single aspect of legislation, whether it's police reform or school desegregation or housing or any of the issues that permeate every aspect of our lives as people of color and as a nation overall. So that's where I'm coming from. I'm kind of overjoyed. I wasn't relieved, so to speak, but because I knew that all the other candidates that were being vetted or reviewed as possible running mates were equally as capable, equally as competent, equally as dynamic women, whether it was Tammy Duckworth or Elizabeth Warren. Each of those women and those candidates bring something to the table that I think we've needed for a very long time, and everybody was let down from the 2016, you know, election outcome. And so, you know, I was in Camp Hillary, but I'm Joe Biden, Kamala Harris all the way. So I'm hopeful that our future can be brighter if everyone turns out to vote who's eligible to vote, and, you know, particularly in the immigrant community or population as well.
Gretchen, let me add, you know, one of the questions that you asked was, can she hold her own? And I think absolutely she can hold her own. I think she's already demonstrated that during the debates, and I think she will demonstrate that during future debates. I think also being a graduate of an HBCU definitely brings a different lens to her experience, and I think that that will be really valuable as it relates to attracting the black vote. And let's face it, you know, I think black people have felt as though the Democrats have taken us for granted for years. And so I think this definitely helps in terms of people's decision. I mean, frankly, I think, you know, people were going to vote. People who are like myself are probably going to vote for anybody as long as it wasn't Trump, right? At least people that I talk to in my community, you know, express that sentiment that, you know, it could be a tree running for office. As long as it's not Trump, they would probably vote for that tree. But I think that in this particular case, Kamala Harris is certainly a very formidable opponent, and I think it raises the stature and of vice president. And I think this pick is extremely important. You know, a lot of commentators have talked about, you know, with Joe Biden being the age that he is and, you know, how old he will be, especially if he runs for a second term and how that might impact. So in some ways, his vice presidential pick is even more important than ever.
So let me ask you all this, and since I started with Ava the last time, I'm going to start with Nadine. Did Vice President Joe Biden back himself into a corner early on by saying, I'm going to pick a woman, and then, you know, then afterwards I'm going to pick a person of color? Do you think if he had not uttered those words early on that Senator Harris would be his pick right now? Nadine?
That's a good question. I'm not sure that, you know, like the other commentator said, that we would probably have been disappointed with, you know, if it wasn't a woman of color, if it was anybody else, because I think people are at the point where it's anybody but Trump. I wouldn't say a tree, but along those lines. But it's I think it was almost a foregone conclusion, though. I mean, it was strategic in the sense that, okay, we had Barack and we had Hillary had a successful campaign, although she did not win. So to me, it's like, what else is left other than an Asian-American and, you know, a female American? So, and here you have the combination, the intersectionality of culture and race and ethnicity. So whether it was her or it was Tammy Duckworth or you know, I was even in Team Val Demings' camp if she was nominated. But the fact that he chose her, to me, was almost a foregone conclusion. If you're looking at, you know, the next thing, because the other issue is going to be, okay, Supreme Court nominations. We already have a Latino there. We have, you know, a female Jewish woman. So next we're going to have to, you know, by any stretch of the imagination, select somebody or a short list of candidates, there's going to be a woman of color, more so than Sotomayor. So to me, it was like this was the next step and an obvious step in that respect. And to, you know, echo what your other commentator was saying, that she's a formidable candidate because she's knowledgeable, she's articulate, she knows her stuff. So whether it's to go in a debate against Mike Pence or anybody else, I don't necessarily think that Biden backed himself into a corner other than he did what was expected. And so even if he had chosen a male running mate, any of the other candidates who had dropped out or somebody, you know, a dark horse that came from the rear, I think anybody would have said, okay, we'll go with whatever you or whomever you selected because it's better than what we have now. Clearly.
Ava,
so Gretchen,
your take?
Gretchen, as Nadine said, I don't think he backed himself in a corner at all. In fact, I think he made himself accountable, and I think that's what people have been wanting, some accountability. I think if he had not selected a woman, period, he would have been in some trouble, right? People would have voted for him anyway, but I think they would have been reminded of the fact that he made a statement and didn't deliver on his statement. And the fact that he now has a woman of color as a running mate, you know, does say something for him as a white man who is saying, okay, we know the country is changing in terms of its racial makeup. We know that the country is going to be more black and brown people and more people of mixed and multiracial and multiethnic heritage. And it's important for us to have some of that representation in the highest levels of government. I received the other day it might have been in the New York Times, and then with her being a member of ALF Kappa Alpha Sorority, being, you know, a graduate of a historically black college or university, you know, that resonates with people in terms of her experiences and her understanding, her lived experience of being a person of color in the United States. And so I don't think he backed himself into a corner. I think in many ways it was a very bold statement to make because he had to deliver on it or face some negative consequences, you know, whether the consequences would have been so dire that would have prevented him from being successful on the campaign trail, probably not. But again, I don't think he backed himself into a corner.
I actually think it speaks to his character, because one of the things that it says to me is that he's at least willing to learn. He may have a blind spot like all of us do, but that he's willing to learn, especially from that, you know, very famous debate, or infamous, depending on how you look at it, when she said, you know, she was the little girl that was bussed, you know, not just the holding him accountable, but helping him to come to an awareness that he may not have had before. And I think it speaks volumes to say that he could overcome that challenge of feeling put upon or put on the spot, and that he's at least willing to learn. If he didn't learn anything from the Obama administration during this entire process and then looking out into what's going on with the protests and the George Floyd killings, that he's very aware, he has to put his finger on the pulse of what's happening in the communities, not just in Washington, D.C., in the halls of Congress and the White House, but everywhere else, and who we are as a people and as a country. And so it, to me, it speaks volumes that whether it was people on his campaign that put this together or people in his ear, but that he, you know, was willing and is able to learn and to grow even at 77 to say, okay, if I last one term or two terms, this is who I am as an individual. And whether I agree 100% with somebody who's just, you know, a brown noser, I'm going to go with the best possible candidate because I love America this much and I love all her people, not just some.
Okay.
I agree that it speaks to his humanity and his humility because it's, you know, sometimes it's very difficult to not hold a grudge when you feel as though you've been somehow belittled on a national stage, like a debate stage. So I do think it also sends a message and also creates an opportunity for modeling, particularly for white men who had all the privilege for the most part, you know, in American society. But I also think we have to be clear that this is also a strategy, right? It's a strategy to win. And I hope it works, because I think if it works, then we will see other politicians perhaps rethink whatever their motivation is, you know, whether it's pure or not, they will rethink who can be running mates, who can be successful candidates in political life.
We are going to take our first break. We're late, but I knew this conversation was going to be good, and because I got some really great women on the phone here. We are here with attorney Nadine Brown, professor Dr. Ava Greenwell, talking about the selection of Kamala Harris for the VP candidate for the Democratic Party. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. Please feel free to join the conversation. The number is 516-387-1944, and we will be right back.
Over the past 60 years, Dove Beauty Bar's superior formula has remained unchanged. But when it comes to beauty, everything changed. Together, we redefined beauty. We said no to stereotypes and yes to every type. We let go of judgments and embraced what makes us unique. We're proud to have been there with you, caring for you every step of the way. Here's to the next 60 years.
Hi, I'm Tim Garrison. You may know me as Timmy G. Yeah, I know. It's been two decades, but I want you to know I'm back in the art with you. And I've got a mix of music that can help you relax and chill out. It's smooth. It's relaxing. It's chill out jazz. The soulful mix of smooth jazz, soul, and smooth R&B. So join me every Wednesday night, 10 p.m. to midnight, on K-Ham Radio.
Are you chilling?
Good morning. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. We are talking about the selection of Senator Kamala Harris as the vice presidential not candidate for the Democratic Party. And I think I saw a 954 number. Is Stephanie, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you.
Hi. Okay. Good morning, Stephanie Dukes. Thanks for joining us. You guys have heard Stephanie before. She's an author and my former college roommate, dormmate. So, Stephanie, I want to get a little bit of insight from you about the selection of Senator Harris for this position.
Thank you. Good morning. I just left a Home Builders Association meeting where I am a candidate for our congressional seat, House seat in Florida, District 32. And one of the things we were talking about was housing for disability. And I loved his choice with our VP pick for Harris, because her platform, when she first came out, talked about disabilities, programs for people with disabilities. And none of the other candidates addressed that population. So when he picked her, I agreed. I did not get the name of our speaker who was talking about the strategy, but that's exactly how I feel about it. It was a good strategy. she touches so many different demographics, and she's strong. She's strong in those areas. Sometimes when we as African-American women, when we are strong and bold about something, we are talked about negatively. But in this instance, that's what we need, someone who can talk boldly and strongly and be that that attack. I hate to call women this, but that attack bulldog that we're going to need in this fight.
I think a better word is mouthpiece. We're that mouthpiece and that advocate.
Mouthpiece.
But yes, I agree. I agree
Thank
with you.
Thank you.
So, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, and that goes to the point that we were making before, Gretchen, the question you asked about, you know, whether she can hold her own. Again, I think I think she's shown that, you know, that she can speak truth to power. And, you know, to her point about, you know, busing, you know, a lot of cities are still living with the legacy of busing in this country. And, you know, to that issue, frankly, I think there are a lot of black people, and I know when I was in Florida covering education, you know, this came up with some black families that were actually fed up with busing because busing wasn't achieving and does not achieve the goal of equity in education. And that's what people want. They want equity and access to quality education. And just because you bus somebody from one school to another doesn't mean you're going to have quality education. And so I think when we look back on the issue of busing, we can say that the issue really shouldn't be about busing. It should be about equity and the quality of education, regardless of what the makeup is, the racial makeup is of your school. And so to me, that was a bigger issue rather than, hey, because busing has not created the kind of schools that we need.
And I think with that, one of her, when she was running, one of her platform issues attacked that issue. So it's because we move where, like this meeting I just left, people choose their homes based on their school, their school zoning area. How well is that school performing? Okay. And then they, probably subconsciously, they look at the demographics or the racial makeup of the students in that school. But if that school is performing well, that's where they want to be. We all want to be there.
Absolutely. Okay. And so what I would like to see them, you know, I mean, there's so many issues, right? So many needs that have to be addressed. And I think, as we said, you know, Kamala Harris, she ticks all the boxes, I mean, to put it plainly. But in the end, I think, you know, we still need to be about holding them accountable and making sure that we are bold in our desire for issues that need to be addressed systemically. You know, it is time out for these Band-Aid approaches to all the challenges that plague, you know, our area. I'm in the Chicago area right now. I'm sure you all heard this weekend where we had major looting in the downtown area in what's considered the Gold Coast area of Chicago. We have a black mayor and a black police chief. And so what that tells you is now they've inherited, you know, decades of disinvestment in these various neighborhoods. But under their watch, you see mostly black and brown people going in looting. And of course, the deeper issue is why people feel as though they have to do that, right? And so we've got some major, major issues that we're going to need to really address deeply, and that's nationally as well as locally, depending on where you live. So we don't have time to play, I think, when it comes to this issue. We've got to be demanding of things that our communities need.
Most definitely. Most definitely.
So,
you know,
we're gonna take our next break on time. So we're gonna do that right now, and then when we come back, I want to talk about the nasty girl. What is that all about?
Yes. I have a lot to say about that.
I know we all do. So, but we're gonna do it when we come back. We are talking about the selection of Senator Kamala Harris as the VP candidate for the Democratic Party. This is G Power Hour. I never had it so good entertainment. If you want to join the conversation, numbers, if you can get in, the number is 516-387-1944, and we will be right back.
This is Douglas Dobbs of Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community for 29 years with quality funeral and cremation services. Honoring all religions and faiths, we have been here for many grieving families. Whether it's a complete funeral service with a burial or a simple, dignified cremation, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here for you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720. Dobbs, dedicated to serving our families.
Having a wedding, reception, family reunion, planning a banquet, or some other fundraising event. Need to share your knowledge through a workshop or seminar, or it's a difficult time and you need to plan a wake or repast. Let us help. At our gatherings, let us reduce the stress and make the occasion memorable, treasured. Call our gatherings at 407-968-9387 or email ourgatherings@yahoo.com. Let us help plan your special event.
Good afternoon, and welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. We are talking about the selection of Senator Kamala Harris for the vice presidential candidacy for the Democratic Party. And I have with us, blessed to have with us, immigration attorney Nadine Brown, journalism professor, Dr. Professor Ava Greenwell, Ava Thompson Greenwell, and candidate for state representative, Southlake County, Stephanie Dukes. And so, and if you want to try to get in the conversation, I don't know, I think I needed a longer show with these three dynamic ladies. So, we might have another conversation part two, second day somewhere. But the number is 516-387-1944. So, I think someone needs either to get a dictionary to find out what nasty really means, or, he just really, I don't know, needed
it's
detention
typical,
or something when he was
if
in
I,
school.
It's just typical misogynistic behavior. I see it all the time in the courtroom when you don't have anything substantive to attack your opponent with. You go for the personal malignment of their character. So, I mean, that's just, it's old hash where he's going to label somebody nasty, whether you want to use Wikipedia or a dictionary to label it. He has nothing else substantive to disparage her with other than to say that she's nasty because she's speaking the truth, because she's speaking from a place of power, because she's speaking from a place of knowledge, and he's got nothing.
I've always said, number one, whether it's this or something else, he's still stuck back in grade school to me.
Yes.
He's like an overgrown bully. Vocabulary, number one, his vocabulary is very limited. He uses the same generic childhood phrases over and over and over, number one. Number two, his behavior is that of someone in junior high school in terms of class bully. Because that's the only thing he has that he knows how to do that he has in his corner. So that to me, it's not even about the name calling. It's just about behavior itself. It's like,
well, this is because he's an emotional response to a lot of rage and anger. That's how he got his vote, and that's who he is. So he's going to respond in kind with, nasty statements, using the word nasty, because that's all he has in his bag of tricks, is an emotional reaction to statements that he can't really respond or answer.
And he knows the word nasty is a very visual term. And, Ava, I know you got to go. You got a lot of stuff.
No, I was just going to say, but, we expect this from him, right? So
exactly.
I don't think we would be surprised that he would use that term nasty. He's used that term also on reporters, White House correspondents, and particularly black women reporters. I did a interview with someone who wrote a piece about this, and the point that I wanted to make is that because there are so few Black women White House correspondents, when he does that to him, it really highlights their presence among the White House press corps,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
is really disproportionately dangerous, and it's also so disrespectful. And so when we think
mm-hmm.
about professionalism and being able to hold Black women in the same high esteem that we hold Black women, he doesn't care about that. I mean, he doesn't care about holding women in high esteem, period, let alone Black women in high esteem. And so again,
yeah.
you know, I wasn't surprised at all when he made those comments. And also he contradicts himself every day. It's almost as if his mind is playing tricks on him. And so we should be we should have expected that, and I think most people did. I heard an interview with Valerie Jarrett yesterday on CBS News where she said that Black women of her stature, well, not just Black women, but women in general who are in politics of her stature, are really paying attention and will be paying attention to how Kamala Harris is portrayed, the words that are used about her. I mean, if you remember, you know, when Hillary Clinton ran, you know, journalists and some commentators focused on, well, what's she wearing? Is she wearing a pantsuit or is she wearing a dress? That's irrelevant
mm-hmm.
of what she's
mm-hmm.
wearing. What's relevant is what is her platform and what is she saying,
right.
and what is she going to do? And so this group of women, Valerie Jarrett talked about, will be paying attention and calling out inappropriate word choices, inappropriate
mm-hmm.
characterizations, gendered descriptions that are inappropriate
mm-hmm.
in this particular case. And I'm happy to see that. I hope, first of all, it'd be great if they didn't have a lot poured on, but we know that that's not going to be the case. But I hope it will be an educational opportunity for all of us to really think about, you know, these are people, you know, even though it's politics, right? And people say, well, you know, politics is a dirty business, and, you know, when you play politics, you're going to, you know, get in the mud and get dirty. But it doesn't have to be that way, I don't think. I think it can be civil. I think we can disagree, but we can also do it in a way that is still professional and can leave your professionalism intact at the end. And I don't expect to see that in this particular case because of who they're running against. But
mm-hmm.
I do hope that they will be able to fight back in a way that is effective and still keeping their heads held high.
As a candidate, that is how we ran our campaign. We run our campaign on those principles. We're not going to be nasty. We're not going to get in the mud with you.
Mm-hmm.
The group I just met with now was the Republican group. But there is common ground. We don't talk about where our different, you know, oh, you're there. No, let's find that common ground and let's stay there. I love what you said about calling it out. And the thing something hit my mind says, you know, let's stand up. Every time they do that to her, I think it's incumbent of us also, like Jarrett said, to organize as a group of women. And every time you call her this, we are going to stand up and say something.
Mm-hmm.
Stand up and do
Absolutely.
Something. So I like how you said that, and it just shouldn't be Jarrett's group. We should, as women all over everywhere, organize our sister circles or groups
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
be ready. Every time our local journalists and people call her out, bam, we got something for you. And
mm-hmm.
let them know, no, we're not going to take that, because when you slap her, you slap us.
Mm-hmm.
So
absolutely.
I like that.
And I was just so happy to hear a lot of
Ava and Nadine, hold on just a moment. I think we might have another caller on the line, so I want to check. There's a 407-953. Are you there?
Hello,
yes. Hi. Welcome to G's Power Hour. Who's speaking?
This is LaWanna Gelzer. How are you?
Hey. All right. Thank you. This is another person I invited, LaWanna Gelzer. Thanks for joining us. I know you run races here in Central Florida as well. So can you talk a little bit about your take on
the selection of Kamala Harris for the VP candidate, and also your insight in terms of the nasty label.
Well, she was not my first pick, but I'm glad it was not our congressperson here in Orlando, Val Demings. We just, her record in the vetting was not something we wanted to represent our community and our country. But moving forward, the nasty, it's the same classification as the angry black woman. It's the same classification that a lot of us get because we're strong and we're caring individuals. Instead of looking at our strength, they want to, and our passion for our community and our people, they want to demonize that. So that's just what the president is trying to do. I usually call him just 45. Is it new? No, it's not new. But a good pick. We still got to keep holding the Democrats especially accountable, because as a statistician, we know you cannot win an election without black women.
Hello.
Hey, hey.
So true.
That's the power.
So true. Even if it's just us hitting somebody over the head and say, go get your ballot in. You know, go to the polls or whatever. You know, I mean, that's what we're good at doing. We're there to kind of say, hey, you know, handle your business. You know, so even if we just do that.
You're right. But, you know, like I said at the beginning, I'm a statistician. We vote at a percentage rate no one can touch. And so for a person who's been a Democrat for over 30 years, I was leaning towards the independent. But I understand being a part of the primaries and understanding how you need to be there to make the decision. But I was very concerned about who was going to talk about something that is affecting our communities at a disproportionate rate. And I did hear that come out. Our environment is disproportionately affecting us, air quality and other things. So I was just looking for someone who could understand what our communities and what usually, unfortunately, women leading the household, especially communities of color, what was important to us? Because we have been there all along, and I did not want to wait another 4 years because I don't know if people would wait another 4 years. How much more do you need to see before you understand enough is enough?
So true. So, then my other question is, now in the event that they do take over office and, you know, in well, win the election in November and there's no real backlash because he still hasn't answered the question whether or not he's going to accept the results or ask for a recount or whatever. But let's say we have the Biden Harris ticket in January. One of the issues, obviously, in addition to COVID, that's going to be ongoing for quite a while, but is the Black Lives Matter and the social justice issue. And LaWanna, since you came in later, I want to start with you. How do you think that will be at the top of their agenda, number one, and number two? What is the first thing, in your opinion, that they should address in order to, restore some sort of order and make things better and get things on track?
The acknowledgement that the slave patrol is alive and well in America. Policing is a problem. And I don't have time for the play on words. It's not about defunding. It's about reforming the policing. Currently, last Saturday, a young man got shot in the back by Orange County Sheriff deputies. And nobody camps has been released or anything. And a lot of people don't even know about this. So for a person who's been working with police reforming and working with the community, we clearly need to understand there is some systemic racism that's been lingering for 400 years in this country, but a lot of people are tired of it. So they have to address this issue. And when I'm given the opportunity to let people know how bad it is in Orlando, we're still number one in the country for excessive force cases. So people need to understand when you come to visit, this is not the best place to live because we're It's a terrible place when it comes to law enforcement. And I understand they want to go home, but I want to go home from a traffic stop too. I understand all lives matter, but black lives matter, because you're demonizing us and giving us sentences that, and you're killing us for violation or running away from you. You're shooting us in the back. So you need to make changes in your policies to protect the community, especially equally, and you need to address the issue of over-policing. See, we track how many arrests are in zip codes, and we can clearly see you spend more of your time in communities of color up patrolling as if we're property. That's why I call it the slave patrol. You're just up looking for something, but you don't apply that same mentality and that same effort in other communities. So they have to address that. And 8 Can't Wait is the beginning. It's not the end. Police reform is needed, and it's needed now.
I'm going to go to Ava. What's your take? What do you think should they start with? I mean, in terms of getting things under control with the Black Lives Matter and the social justice situation. I mean, you're in the Chicago area, so you're dealing with a lot right now. Did I lose Ava? Well, let's go to Nadine. Oh, now I can hear you, Ava. Go ahead.
Okay, all right. Yeah, I think there were some problems with my phone. Can you still hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So I was going to say I agree 100% with police reform. I think prior to the cell phone, white people thought this just couldn't be happening, and now they see that it is happening. And, of course, Gretchen, I think we had our own issue. I had my own issue with my son when he was 12 years old, being followed by police while he was riding his bike and being accused of robbing a home, which he did not do, and being handcuffed right in front of our home. Now, thank God nothing happened to him physically, but the mental anguish that our black men and women, but particularly young black men, face just going about their business and the thought of getting stopped by the police, it's causing a mental breakdown among our young black men, period. My son is 21 now, and I can see he's trying not to be affected by it, but he's affected by it. We're all affected by it. So that has to be addressed immediately. The other issue I think that needs to be addressed is reparations. I'm reading a book right now called From Here to Eternity. I don't know if you all have seen it, by William Darity and Kirsten Mullen. And they make a very powerful argument going back, looking at the historical records of how land, housing, just the theft and plunder of our resources over 400 years, and still no official apology, let alone a discussion about the multiplier effect of interest rates that's owed and due to us. And so I would like to see that issue become a serious issue for this next administration.
Stephanie?
I agree with that. I think that our legislators is where we're going to have to lay that, make sure that our representatives, and we control the Senate to make sure we can put that out there, do it effectively, and have it pass both houses. And, of course, then we know we have the president's signature on it, but we're going to have to capture both houses to do that.
Nadine?
I think the two fundamental issues to address all of those issues has to do with education and healthcare. So for me, from my perspective, with the racial profiling, that has to do with educating the police force, but also how they effectively do their jobs, because it is a difficult job, and I know people in the service, but I think the fundamental issues is if nobody's educated as to why they're doing what they're doing, then we're still going to have the problem pervasive, whether it's after 4 years or 8 years of a Democratic administration or houses of Congress that are positively well-meaning and left-leaning. So I think it's you know, revamping the education system as far as American history, and you can't get reparations unless you have the financing and who's going to pay for it, which is always going to be a cornerstone issue. So I think if we focus our energies on educating not just school children but people who are going through the police academies on how to administer their jobs when they're policing communities, whether it's integrated or just black communities, then I think that we will solve a lot of problems or at least start in the right direction. And then the second issue is healthcare. I mean, we're talking about the disparities in African-American and brown and you know, black communities as the effects of COVID. And I think that if we work towards a more equitable, maybe universal health care, that we will begin to rectify some of those issues. But that also requires educating our health care clinicians and professionals that are making the decisions about who to take care of and how to take care of. And the ultimate issue is always the financing, who has insurance and who doesn't have insurance, that will affect the kind of care, the quality of care that you receive. So I think it has to do with education fundamentally in grade school, high school, college, our police academies, our legislators even, because a lot of the decisions that they're making that we see the patrolmen carrying out is their understanding of what the law says they can and cannot do, whether it's a police manual or it's a state statute that empowers them to do what they think they can do with a gun or not. So I think those are the two fundamental issues that we need to begin working on. And then I think the others will fall into place when it comes to the diminished racial profiling in our communities, when it comes to policing, and the inequitable criminal justice system that I see on a daily basis, the inequities when it comes to who gets detained and who doesn't get detained as immigrants, and then who gets the health care and who doesn't get the health care. But I think that fundamentally is what we need to start work on, and holding people accountable is definitely a must, but you can't hold them accountable if they don't know what they're being held accountable for, and it's to educate them on the histories and the roots of why we are where we are in 2020.
And not only that, I need to chime in here, because I have family, and I have always had family as long as I can remember, that has been in law enforcement in some way, shape, or form. And they've done good work, but I also know, having worked in journalism and everything, I've covered, you know, different stories of where police themselves have been arrested for domestic violence and other things, other types of behaviors, in addition to general disparity in terms of how they deal with the black community. But one of the things that has always bothered me is that, why are you spending so much time training and testing for how this police officer uses their gun and not how they may have calmed a particular situation? They seem to get trained more on the letter of the law and the diplomacy rather than the diplomacy, you know, in the spirit of the law. They're trained in terms of, you know, you get a score for you know, how well you hit the target, and whether if they send you back and make you get glasses. You get tested also for your physical abilities in terms of can you run this far, you know, are you physically fit and all of that type of stuff. That's all well and good. But what about this other stuff? In fact, I think there should be some sort of psychological screening where you weed out some of these people before they become candidates, even before they even enter the academy for the police, because there's some people that don't need to be police. Bottom line,
definitely so. I would agree with that statement. And I know that one of the panelists said that she didn't particularly think that one of our local Congress people should have been considered, but I had heard Val Deming say something that I thought was on point, whether or not you agree with her or not, and that is, you know, the criminal justice system is the biggest daycare or mental health facility, and that's not just for the incarcerated, but it's also for the people who are on the streets. So there are not that mental health screening for officers to see how they respond under pressure in a situation, but, you know, how they can discharge their weapon, whether they should actually be trained as mediators like we are as attorneys to de-escalate a situation. It's how you police, whether or not you should even be carrying a weapon in certain circumstances. Outside of Chicago and some of the metro areas that are definitely hotbeds for gang violence and just a lot of nefarious behavior, still we need to educate both the police force and the corrections facilities as to how to care for individuals and screen them, those that are working and those that are incarcerated or get caught up in the system.
I just want to say that that was one of our guides to improving community policing. The one thing when they come out, they only do that evaluation at the beginning. That's something we felt like should be evaluated yearly or at least every 2 years when you're getting your recertification. Just like I have to, as an accountant, I have to get recertified. We're saying that if you're going to do training, the policies, but we wanted the policies to make sure they are implemented and not just said. So Val said a lot of things, but some of these policies and some of the things that people are talking about today, when she was there as the chief of police, we presented those years, and we just recently presented them again 5 years ago and just recently again. So we're talking about PSTD. We're talking about a lot of the things that a lot of communities are talking about, but we're making suggestions, and they're falling on deaf ears when it comes to our law enforcement here in Central Florida. Not everywhere else, but here. So we're providing solutions.
We're running out of time. I should have probably had this show extended, and I'm going to invite all of you all back. Hopefully you'll take me up on it. I want to thank you, Ms. Gelder, Ms. Dukes, Mrs. Greenwell, Ms. Brown.
You're welcome.
Thank you all for joining us.
Appreciate it.
And like I said, hopefully, you know, we'll talk again before this year is out and before the definitely before the general election. I'd like to have you all back if you're willing. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Sounds good.
Thanks.
Take care of yourself.
Everybody take care. Please be well. Take care of yourselves, please. Before we leave, I'm just taking a point of privilege. I got to call Sally's out, the high price salon that wanted to charge me 15 cents for a paper bag, small paper bag. That's just not right. Anyway, just wanted to say that. Just remember, next week we have Burton Kelso, our tech guy. He's on Third Thursday. Friday in the Garden next Friday. Chef V on Monday. And if you have any suggestions for any show ideas, please hit me up on the G's Power Hour Facebook page. Also, it is still early voting. Please go vote. Also, please answer the census. There's just a lot of stuff going on, I know, but please pay attention to all of this because all of it matters. So just please really pay attention. Thank you for joining us. This has been G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. Be well, be safe, and please remember, all real power comes from God. Take care.
Get up on your feet in here. Woo!